The culture is the culture. It's 4 to 6A to B, competitive excellence, and the brotherhood. The plan to win has never changed. So the culture here and the plan to win is always going to be here at Ohio State.
Welcome back to 4 to 6 with A&B, your Ohio State podcast brought to you by The Athletic. This is Bill Landis, joined, as I always am, by my main man, Ari Wasserman. Ari, how you doing?
I really wish you were joined in real life right now, Mr. Living the Dream at Marriott Beach Club in Panama City Beach.
It's Panama City Beach adjacent. I'm not actually on the beach. I'm just kind of near the beach.
I don't know. Like, joined virtually through Zoom, not joined in real life with a Publix meatball sub going down my throat looking at palm trees in the ocean. So
yeah, this guy's over here complaining about it when he's, like, leaving for Mexico in 10 minutes.
No, I know, but it's just like, this is... If I were to work a full week writing stories about the national championship game, I'd want to do it while looking at a hot tub. I mean, and an ocean like you. And Publix is the thing that we're not talking about the most here.
Yeah, Publix is the key here. Publix is 5 minutes from where I'm staying. Picked up a chicken tender sub the other day. It was life-changing. And I will be back there later this afternoon and probably eat another chicken tender sub.
Do you think that they have chicken tender subs in Cabo? Okay, debate over.
No, probably not. Probably not. Okay, I win. Ohio State and Alabama are playing in the national championship, in case you hadn't heard. It's on January 11th in Miami, which is why I am in Florida. I just never left. Left the Sugar Bowl, just stayed down here. So I'm still in Florida, waiting to head to South Florida later in the week to cover the Buckeyes and the Crimson Tide. We're going to do a couple more shows this week leading into that game. We'll eventually get to our picks. We're not going to do that just yet, but we're going to talk about the game a little bit. Some of the things that are in front of mind for us as we try to decide how we think it might go, whether or not we think Ohio State can win, which is like a realistic conversation that I don't think either of us thought we were going to be having 10 days ago. But I think both of us think Ohio State has a shot in this game, and maybe we'll talk a little bit about why. Maybe we'll get into some of the Urban Meyer NFL stuff that seems even more real than when we last discussed it a couple weeks ago. But let's start with a little bit of news, Ari. Justin Fields got dinged up in the Sugar Bowl, in case you hadn't heard. And he did not do his scheduled media availability on Monday. It was a Zoom call. It was supposed to be with Ryan Day, Justin Fields, and Tuff Borland, the head coach and the MVPs, Nick Saban, Devontae Smith, and Patrick Surtain did one as well. Justin Fields did not show up. Trey Sermon took his place. Ryan Day was asked, I would say, like 15 questions, and probably 10 of them were about Justin Fields. And like Justin Fields leaving the game with an injury, coming back, wincing in pain while he's throwing footballs, like, has become a little bit of a thing. I fully expect him to play against Alabama. Ryan Day said he fully expects him to play against Alabama. But like, what do you like? Is this a thing for you? Because this feels like typical football stuff to me. But for some reason, I guess because he's high profile and we're in the national championship now, it's getting talked about in a way that seems like disproportionate to, you know, stuff that happens every Saturday in college football.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, it was interesting because everybody was speculating while watching the game collectively that he had broken ribs. And I think that it's easy to look at it through the mindset that he did, you know, and if he came back with broken ribs that quickly, then you're afraid. But that's completely an assumption. And, you know, the idea of going into the tent, being looked at by medical personnel and being told, hey, you can go back into the football game is certainly something that we see quite often. So, you know, we got to remember that everybody in the country was watching this game. It looked like a pretty serious injury just from the way it looked. I mean, getting hit with Skalski's crown of his helmet, I think I would die if that happened to me.
Yeah.
You know, and I think it's just something to talk about. I don't know that anything egregiously wrong happened. We don't even know what the nature of the injury is. And I think the real root of this here, Bill, is the quote that he gave at the end of the game of what was your diagnosis? And Justin Fields said, I didn't get a diagnosis. And then that was kind of the catalyst of what caused everybody to flip out a little bit. And it's just like, you're good to go, I think, is a good enough thing to say to somebody if they want to play. You know, I don't feel like Ohio State put somebody out there who was in danger. So if that's what people are worked up about, then maybe you should choose a different sport to watch, because that's something that happens all the time.
Yeah, and I also think quote, I didn't get a diagnosis might just be a nice way of saying I'm not telling you what's wrong with me. Because, I mean, Justin Fields, I guess, throughout his career has been somewhat forthcoming. Like, he told us about his thumb in the Northwestern game, but he didn't really tell us what was going on with his knee last year. And, like, Ohio State doesn't get into the injury specifics. A lot of teams don't do that. So Justin Fields could have just said that as a way of dodging the question. I don't know if they, like, I guess it's possible he went into the tent, they gave him something to help him with the pain, and then he went back on the field and they just said you're good to go without telling him literally anything about what was wrong with him. I would think that that's probably not what happened. But I'm also not surprised, or wouldn't be surprised, if Justin Fields sat down in that chair for a Zoom call after the game and didn't want to divulge, you know, his own personal medical information.
Or was told not to.
Or he was told not to, yeah, which again, happens just about everywhere in college football. Like, I get, like, Ohio State is playing in the national championship. There's two teams left playing. Justin Fields is as high profile as it gets in college football. And if you have a problem, I guess, with, like, just generally how injuries are handled in college football, I think that's fair and valid and true, and I would agree with you. But it's also, like, what happened is not anything that's, like, unique to Ohio State. Like, that's football. Football is very dirty. Football's a dirty game. Guys are playing hurt all the time. They take things to help numb that pain so they can get out onto the field. It happens literally every Saturday and Sunday and Thursday. Anytime you're watching a football game, probably half the guys out there are dealing with something like that. So I don't know why this has become more of a thing. And maybe it's not as much of a thing as I'm making it out to be, but it feels like it is. And that feels sort of like the wrong tenor unless you're about to launch a crusade against football in general.
Yeah. I don't know that I've seen anything of anybody outwardly criticizing. I've seen a few tweets about, you know, how he should have known his diagnosis and all that stuff. And it's also, like you said, you don't know exactly what he knew or what they knew. But let's put it this way too, Bill. If he was in any actual real danger, I'm not saying that he's not in pain. I'm not even saying he's not hurt. But he was fine. I mean, he threw six interceptions or six incompletions and six touchdown passes. So it's like, I don't know the extent of the injury. Justin Fields, they might not even know the extent of the injury, even though I'm sure we both think that he does. But it was a gutsy performance. And if he was severely injured, he couldn't throw a pass the way. I mean, he threw up after he came back into the game. Didn't he throw like a 70-yard pass in the air?
Yeah, well, his very first play when he came back into the game, he threw a touchdown on a sprint out to Jeremy Ruckert, I think. It was Chris Olave. Was it a tight end? Doesn't matter. He threw a touchdown on the sprint out pass, and then like immediately after throwing the ball, he started grabbing his side and like limped off the field. And then he went into the injury tent, came back out, and he played the rest of the game, and he threw like 19 more touchdowns. And he did throw that one that was like 70 yards in the air. He threw the bullet to Jeremy Ruckert. Like He didn't run as much. He took another big hit and like got up slow, but I'm sure it hurt like hell to be playing.
Yeah,
but
nobody's saying it didn't hurt.
And he didn't look hindered in playing. And I think if it was something super, super serious, he wouldn't have been able to do that stuff.
I think the more interesting thing, Bill, is how this could impact Ohio State's game plan going forward. Because I think the assumption here is that he's going to play. And it's one of these things of if you don't know what the actual injury is specifically, then it's hard to diagnose. Or try to at least come up with a time frame in our made up non-doctor brains to come up with that sort of thing. But when you're in a situation where you're playing Alabama and you've got 10 days to rest up, you know, somebody who's in his physical shape and somebody who has as much resources as he does in terms of, you know, medical care and rehab and all the things that a person with a rib injury might need, I think 10 days is kind of a lot. It might not be a lot if his ribs are fractured. But assuming that he's in a good enough spot to play the way that he did, Ryan Day said that he woke up feeling better than they thought he would. You know, all the things that in terms of a rehabilitation standpoint, he's got all the resources in the world. But the thing that I thought was interesting is that at the beginning of the game, Ohio State was running Justin Fields like it was the last game of the year, can't hold anything back type thing. Mm-hmm. And then once that hit happened, that stuff stopped. And rightfully so, because they didn't want him to get hit again. The thing I think is interesting is what will the game plan look like against Alabama? And if he can't run the way that they wanted to run and how they designed him to run against the Clemson game, does that change your view of what Ohio State's offense is capable of against the Crimson Tide?
It does, but I don't know. Like his not running against Clemson, I don't think was because he couldn't run. It's because he didn't want him to get hit.
Right, exactly.
So I think like his maneuverability in the pocket, stepping up, stepping out, throwing on the run, like none of that stuff really seemed to change against Clemson. And I think he did run the ball once or twice on scrambles after he got hurt in the Sugar Bowl. So if it's something that like you're just so afraid of him getting hit that like you're not going to run him in the red zone on design stuff when you're trying to finish drives, I think that's an issue. But I also don't think we're there. And if he's just sore, I think that can dissipate by the time they get to the national championship game on Monday night. And I think he'll be, you know, the fully formed version of Justin Fields, or as fully formed as a guy can be after playing seven games or whatever it's been. So if he can't do it, then yeah, that's a huge issue, because I think he needs to do it for Ohio State to keep pace with Alabama. But I am anticipating that he will be able to do it.
Yeah, I think that's an important dynamic of the game. And Ohio State hasn't really been put in a situation where they need to rely on that much, Bill, or not rely on it, that even willing to do it. So the fact that they're able to do it, you know, at the beginning of the game, it was working. You know, and even the first third down call of the game, they did a little JT Wright action there. And, you know, even though that didn't work, I think that adding that element of keeping it on the zone reads and designed runs for the quarterback completely changes the dynamic of the way that you have to defend Ohio State, because so many teams – in the past 2 years have been able to just assume that he's going to give the ball in a situation where he has a choice, because he's given it so often. And, you know, if he's a very gifted runner and a very gifted athlete, and having that dynamic in Ohio State's offense gives them an element to the run game that's absolutely necessary to go in conjunction with Trey Sermon and to open up the passing game. And, you know, all the things that come along with having a running threat quarterback. So I think it's going to be very interesting to track. I don't know if it's just bad luck for Justin, but it feels like every time we're in a game or talking about a game that's of these magnitudes, that he's dealing with something, whether it be the knee injury in the playoff last year, the thumb going into last week, and now the rib cage. But it's like so funny to me, Landis, that like going into the playoff, you would make the point that Ohio State was fresher and healthier, and that's going to give them a big advantage going into the game. And I think you could probably make the case that Ohio State is far more banged up than Alabama right now.
I don't know. Alabama is missing its starting center, and Jalen Waddle apparently might play. Like there's reports out that he's practicing this week. What did you make of that? Do you think Jalen Waddle is going to play, or is that somebody like, hey man, why don't you put out there that Jalen Waddle is going to practice this week and give Ohio State something else to worry about?
I saw that. Like somebody sent me a text that said, "What do you think this is going to do with the Waddle news to the betting line?" And I said, "What Waddle news? He's not playing. He broke his ankle." And he said he returned to practice today, and I was like, "What?" I don't even know if you can make Alabama's offense better. So, like, I guess add him into the mix. But that is insane to me.
It'd be pretty crazy if he played. I remember watching the SEC championship game where, like, Jalen Waddle's on the sideline, like looking like he can hardly walk. So, like, now he's going to play in the national championship. I'm skeptical. Maybe they'll put him out there. But I don't think that he's going to be in any kind of condition to, like, truly, truly impact the game. But I suppose it does make Kerry Combs' week a little more hectic if he thinks Jalen Waddle's going to be out there.
Yeah, I mean, absolutely. When we came into the year, if I would have asked you in week one, who's the better receiver, Devontae Smith or Jalen Waddle, is Waddle the more popular answer?
I think everyone probably would have said Waddle.
I mean, that's the type of athlete we're talking about here. That's not like pretty good player returns. It's like they're bringing in another potential Biletnikoff winner.
Yeah, who hasn't played in 3 months?
I know, but if he's able to play, even 80% of that guy is dangerous.
Yeah, no, that's true. 80% of Jalen Waddle is dangerous, but I think like if he plays, it might be like 40% of Jalen Waddle, although that's still pretty dangerous.
Yeah, I mean, 40% of Jalen Waddle would start at 85% of the other schools at that one
receiver. 40% of Jalen Waddle is the best receiver in the Big Ten who's not at Ohio State.
40% of Jalen Waddle sounds like a good ska band name.
Let's move off the Justin Fields thing, but real quick, just I want to wrap up with this. They stopped running him after he got hurt, or ran him far less after he got hurt. They were also up 3 touchdowns, I think. I think the one that he threw as soon as he came back into the game put them up 28-14. Then it was 35-14, and then it was a 3-score game the rest of the way. So you're less incentivized, I think, to run your quarterback in that situation too. So if it was a closer game, maybe they would have ran him more, but. Regardless, I think Justin Fields is going to be okay, and they're going to use him whatever way they need to use him to win a game against Alabama on Monday night.
I agree.
You had a thing you want to talk about. Like, what was your question to me about the Ohio State Clemson game and sort of where that ranks in Ohio State history and how that frames our thinking for the national championship?
Well, let's not just go all the way back to Ohio State history because I don't want to like consider the super soft.
Recent history.
Yeah,
recent history.
I was just wondering if you went back to the beginning of the Urban era in 2012, what wins are more important? I think there's two that are unequivocally more important. I think beating Alabama and beating Oregon in the 2014 postseason are the top two because one was slaying the big Alabama beast, and I think is more. I think the 2014 Alabama win is very similar to this year's Clemson win because it's like the boogeyman for Ohio State that they're chasing down. Maybe this one was sweeter a little bit because Clemson had been such a problem for them in the recent past. But beating the king of the sport on the way to the national championship game, you know, you've got an iconic play from the 2014 game. You've got an iconic player from this year's game. I think they're similar. So, I mean, might want to put them like 2A and 2A. And then, of course, the Oregon game I would put number one, but I would say that of every single win that Ohio State's had dating back to 2012, I think this is the tied for second most important win of program history, and like what that means for like Ohio State fans' mindsets, what this means for Ohio State's mindset, and you know, it almost feels like they already won the national title and they haven't played for it yet because it was such an important win from a mental standpoint for everybody who's involved in it.
I actually think the 2014 Sugar Bowl win is number one by itself at the top of that list. And I'm writing a story about that later this week. I talked with Urban Meyer on Monday about that, and I was talking with Joshua Perry about it on Monday as well, just like what – and people know like the stories a little bit, like the chase, like Alabama was the target for Urban for 2 years, and they finally got there and they beat them. But I think like what Ohio State is right now, this – upper echelon program that recruits nationally, can recruit against anybody, can go anywhere and get any kind of player at once. I'm not sure that happens if they don't beat Alabama. Like, I think even, I don't know what the situation could be. Like, if they would have played like Florida State in that semifinal and beat Florida State and then beat Oregon, I don't know. Ohio State's probably still pretty close to what it is right now, but I don't know if it's exactly what it is right now. I really do think that Alabama win in 2014 was a program changer. And even more so that, like, they finished Java, win the national championship, but like knocking off Bama at that time when the playoff era had just started and Bama was coming off owning the end of the BCS era, and then you go and beat them pretty thoroughly, looked like the better team the entire time, like put your program on even footing with Alabama's. I think that's way more consequential than anything else that they've done since Urban Meyer was here.
Yeah, I think that you could make. I mean, I guess I was just too simplistic in my thought process of winning the national championship game means the most because it is the thing that captured a national title. But I think that you absorb the national championship with that game, and it was like the iconic moments that happened because it was so – while winning the national championship is always going to be the reason why they can say undisputed, without beating Alabama and slaying that monster, that national championship is impossible. So it gets to absorb that a little bit. And I think that's right. But the fact of the matter is that Ryan Day's not even through two full seasons at Ohio State. And I guess you could say a season and a half because they only played six games this year.
Right.
And I think he already has potentially matched Ohio State's most important win of the past decade.
Yeah, I think it's close. It depends on, I think in terms of how it's like remembered, like the legacy of the win, I think it's pretty close, if not even, because of all the stuff that went into it. Like the revenge factor, Dabo ranking them 11th, how weird this season's been. They showed up in that game and they still didn't have guys available. And then like Justin Fields plays out of his mind. Like the way that game is going to be talked about, like moving forward, I think is going to be very similar to the Alabama game. But in terms of like tangible impact on the program, I don't know if that win quite measures up to beating Alabama in the Sugar Bowl.
Is it because Ohio State was already recruiting at a high level before the game started? Is that like your take on that?
Yeah, because it's like it's. I just don't know like how much better can Ohio State like actually get as a program right now, and like there was a real tangible step forward after that Alabama game.
Okay, let me split off with ask you two separate questions, real quick, based on what you just said. Mm-hmm. One, was there a more cathartic win? And I don't know if I don't know if cathartic and big are the same.
No, but I don't think so. I think that this was the most cathartic result. Probably, like, I don't even know. Shoot, I'm trying to think, like, before I started covering Ohio State. You might even, like, it might, like, is it going back to, like, Tressel's first Michigan win?
Yeah, probably. I mean, those Michigan wins meant more than beating Clemson, but the stages are different. And maybe the stages are the same, because the 2002 team played a really close game against Michigan and went to the college national championship as a result of beating Michigan. So you could basically say that that was their semifinal and put them on the same stage. But they had beaten Michigan the first year when they had their first, you know, whatever, three or four loss season that they had to start the Tressel era off. So beating Michigan, it wasn't the first time coming out of the Cooper era. So I think that that kind of takes away from the luster of, or the cathartic nature of that game. But in terms of, it hasn't been since the 90s where Ohio State got their butts kicked by Michigan when they had better teams that Ohio State has felt owned by somebody. And for a while there, they felt owned by Clemson. So to only remove that label and to win in a very convincing fashion, I think, is maybe the most cathartic Ohio State win of my lifetime.
It's definitely the most cathartic since I've been covering the team in 2014. And just like what I know of the recent history before that, I can't think of anything that would come close to matching it. Because like beating Alabama wasn't catharsis. That was like,
well, I think I could push back on you there a little bit. You got to remember, dating back into 2014, the Urban Meyer honeymoon was still like, well, that was year three. And when Urban got hired, the entire world thought, okay, we're Bama now. And it's kind of the same thing that happened to Michigan with Harbaugh. When they got Harbaugh, it's like, okay, we've got our guy. That's it. We're there. But Ohio State went 12-0 their first year and missed the championship game because they were banned from a bowl. The next year, they ran the table again in the regular season, and they lost to Michigan State in the Big Ten championship game, which I think was the first Big Ten championship game ever.
No.
It wasn't?
It was Ohio State's first, but it wasn't the first.
That's what I meant. Sorry. I didn't mean the first edition of it. Ohio State's first Big Ten championship berth. Then they ended up losing to Clemson in the Orange Bowl. Then they lost to Virginia Tech at the beginning of last year. So I would say that beating Alabama at the end of the year was Ohio State's realization for the first time that they could compete. Ohio State's always been a great program. But at the end of 2014, they could sit back and say, we beat Alabama, we're the best. And like, Ohio State can't do that right now. So I think there is a cathartic nature to the idea of investment in Urban, shitty result at the end of 2013 with national championship hopes, bringing back the team in 2014, losing at the beginning of the year and thinking you're going to have to wait till year four to compete again at that level, rattling off those wins, building up, missing key quarterback players, and then beating Alabama, and not just beating them, but like 85 yards through the heart of the South. Like, that run is probably the most iconic play in Ohio State history outside of Holy Buckeye. And I think it's just because Alabama was the big bad wolf that year. Like, we wrote everything we wrote was through the lens of Alabama. And like, Alabama wasn't talking shit the way that Clemson did, or they hadn't beat them three times in a row like Clemson had. So maybe that, like, the Dabo, like, Nick Saban isn't a cartoon character that you can get mad about. He's just really good. Right. So maybe it's a little bit different. But I do think that, like, that game was very cathartic for Ohio State fans because it was the first confirmation of their ability to compete at that level. And like, after that point, we started putting Ohio State in the context of that, and they weren't in that context before Urban's arrival.
Yeah, for sure. No, I agree with that, definitely. This, I guess they're just cathartic for different reasons.
Yeah. I think it's just like Twitter catharticism, where you just like, right, now go talk shit now to people instead of people's comments on the story. Like, I went back and I looked. Like, I wrote a story with Grace Rayner last week just talking about how Clemson is a problem for Ohio State, both on the field and in recruiting. And all the Clemson fans in that comments were like, shut the hell up. You can't talk shit to Clemson unless you beat them one time. And like, all the comments were like, this isn't a rivalry, win once. This isn't a rivalry, compete once. And then like, after the game was over, I went back into the story and Ohio State fans were like, woof. And all the replies would be like, January 2nd. Then I think like, part of the fun of being a fan is being able to talk crap online, right? So like, now they can do that, and it's cathartic for that reason. But in terms of program placement, I don't know. Like, which one do you think was more dramatic of a shift? Beating Alabama in 2014 on the way to the national championship? And I guess we have the benefit of the idea of knowing what happened after that game now. But if, like, even if Ohio State would have lost to Alabama in 14 after, or I mean lost to Oregon after beating Alabama, like, I still think that that Oregon game and winning the national title is part of the luster of that whole thing. And I think that this game alone stands alone. Because even if Ohio State loses to Bama, like, it'll be, like, completely reasonable. Nobody's going to be like, holy shit, they lost to Bama. And then it's just going to be fine.
Yeah, if they would have lost to Alabama, or if they would have, no, I guess if they would have beat Alabama and lost to Oregon and not finished the job, I don't know. I still think that'd be, beating Alabama matters, man. Like, I don't know, even if you don't finish the job, I still think that has a longer lasting impact. Like, if they were to lose to Alabama, it's just like, okay, we're not good enough to compete with the SEC, and that's a different thing. But
I guess doing the thing that puts you in a position to be what you are is a bigger momentum or a bigger victory in terms of what it means than maintaining what you thought you were.
Yeah, but this, like, that's not to minimize this win, because this win, I think this win is important. We talked about it going in. Like, there's a bit of a legitimizing factor to beating Clemson the way they did. Like, Ohio State was much closer to the upper echelon, like just a tick below it, I think, going into this game. The gap was wider going into the Sugar Bowl in 2014. But even beating Clemson the way they did this year, like, still elevated Ohio State in some sense. It just, like, not as dramatically as it did back in 2014.
Well, let me ask you the second part question then, to the thing that I was going to say based on an earlier comment. Do you think that if Ohio State beats Alabama, that Ohio State has reached its program ceiling? Or do you think that being Alabama and winning 5 out of 8 or whatever it is that they did, the crazy number they did, is Ohio State's ceiling?
I don't think it's anybody's ceiling. Like, that's so unheard of, like, in the history, like, in the modern history of college football, that I wouldn't say that that's anyone's ceiling. Like, I wouldn't expect anybody to replicate that. And not that it's impossible, but I would never want to put that expectation on somebody, because, like, it's absurd. If you sit back and think about it, like, what Nick Saban has done is absurd. I think this is probably the ceiling. Like, win a national title, like, always be in contention for it, but win it every couple of years, like, win, like, twice a decade or 3 times a decade or something like that. I think we said that before, right?
Well, I mean, also the path to it. Like, beating Clemson and Alabama on the way to a national championship is, like, the ultimate. Everybody likes to talk about undisputed. Beating Clemson and Alabama in the same season on the way to a national championship is, like, that's it. It's never going to get better than that. Like, I mean, I don't know. I know winning national championships in bulk and hitting 3 out of 4 or 4 out of 7 or, you know, whatever would be a way to create a dynasty. And then that, I think that's the absolute, absolute possibility of a ceiling. But doing it this year in year two of your coach, while also signing perhaps the greatest recruiting class in the history of all recruiting rankings, and then already putting together a 2022 class that might beat it, mm-hmm. while claiming a national championship off the backs of Alabama and Ohio State, is the absolute ceiling for where this program could be at this point. They're 4 quarters away from that.
Yeah, and I think, like, so Clemson's won what? Clemson's won
two
in the last 5 years.
Yeah, 2016 and 2018.
2018, right? Like, I think, like, that's one step short of what Alabama was, and it was, like, really humming, and, like undisputed top of the sport. Nobody could touch them. I think Ohio State maybe could be like that, and maybe they win this year. They go to the playoff next year with, like, with a bridge year, like, between, like, Justin Fields leaving and maybe C.J. Stroud's a starter. Like, he's good, but he's not quite good enough, and then he's back his second year as a starter, and they go to the playoff and win it again. Like, I think 2 and 3 years is certainly possible. I just want to say, like 5 and 8 is nuts. Or whatever it is, whatever it was that Saban.
Yeah.
I think Saban's won, like, every year, but, like, 3 in the last decade or something like that.
Yeah. No, I mean.
Or 4.
Trying to have actual analysis about what they did there and how to duplicate it is almost pointless. You know?
Yeah.
But the thing that's scary to me, Bill, is that this Ohio State team is fractured. Like, it's not great. It's not the greatest team they've had. And it's just, like, I also think that I'm leaning towards picking them in the national title game.
Well, it might be the greatest offense they've had.
It might be the greatest offense they've had. I guess if you take You would take this year's offense after what you saw in the Clemson game over last year's offense?
Yes, I'm there now.
Okay, what changed? Better. They throw it better?
Yeah.
Well, I mean, I guess when you add Ezekiel Elliott to last year's offense and then give Garrett Wilson and Olave another year of maturation and then add the offensive line into the mix and have a five-star offensive tackle who can come in and play guard in the middle of a game and blow people off the ball, I guess you can make that point. It's, like, crazy to me. Like,
no, I guess if you take, like, if you took the aggregate of last year's offense and the aggregate of this year's offense, maybe you'd take last year's, but if I'm taking peak version of either one, I'm taking peak version of this year's.
So you're getting to the point now where you think it's possible that this team is better than last year's? Or do you think that just offensively speaking, that's the case?
Just offensively speaking, the defense is, I think, somewhat significantly worse. The gap between the two defenses is wider than the gap between the two offenses, but I do think the offense is better. And I think that matters more right now in, like, modern college football. So, but I don't, like, overall, man-to-man, strength-to-strength, I probably would take last year's team, but offenses, I don't think twice. I don't think anymore about taking this offense.
Yeah. I mean, I could get behind that. It's just funny to think that if this year's team does it and they beat Alabama, yes, there's never going to be another Justin Fields again. But with the talent that they are stacking up, both at the quarterback position, the skill position players, and on the lines on both sides of the football, like, Ohio State is – let me ask you this. Who's more set up for the future coming off a hypothetical national championship? This year, Ohio State beating Bama, are they better off for the next 3 or 4 year run than the 2014 team was when they beat Alabama? Like, when Ohio State won the national championship in 2014 – we all thought it was the beginning of a new dynasty because the entire team was coming back. Ohio State's recruiting was through the roof. Urban Meyer was still at the peak of being Urban. And it was just like, holy crap, I cannot believe what this team is now going to become after beating Alabama and Oregon and winning a national title. And then obviously that never happened. If Ohio State wins a national championship this year, I think that it's reasonable to expect that they could win 2 out of the next 5.
It's hard because, like, everyone came back after they won the title in 2014, and they're going to lose a lot after this year. But if you think back on it, like, the 2014, 15, 16 recruiting classes at Ohio State were good, like, really good classes. Like, any 99% of college football would sign up for those classes tomorrow and, like, take years off their life to get it. But they don't really stack up to what they're doing now. So, like, immediately next year, like, ability to repeat, I think, is somewhat significantly lower, but the ability to win multiple championships over a 3 or 4 or 5
two out of the span, next five,
I think is much higher with this. I think it's much higher with this team right now.
2 out of the next 5 would give them, if Ohio State wins this year, 3 out of 6. And I think that comes dangerously close to matching what Alabama did.
Yeah. It comes close. Like, it's not exactly it, but it comes close.
Yeah. I just think Ohio State's peak ceiling in a 1 year period, it can't get better than this. Elite level class, Clemson, Bama, boom, and that's it. It's just like you build to for this result. Like, they're 4 quarters away from all the message board posts and all the freaking out and all the speculation and getting through this, all this shit all comes together to get to this perfect season. It can never get better than that.
Are we crowning them national champs, or is that what we're doing?
No. I'm just talking about, hypothetically speaking, program positioning right now.
Yeah.
Where they're at right now. They're 4 quarters away from the epitome of accomplishment at this university in terms of ceiling.
Yeah.
It doesn't even matter what those 4 quarters look like. It could be 3-0. It could be 65-61. If they win that football game, that's it.
Yeah, no, it doesn't. I mean, yeah, just all that matters is that they're one holding the trophy at the end. It doesn't matter what it looks like.
It could be the grossest, ugliest game in the world, and Ohio State will have accomplished something that you build an entire program around, the millions of dollars, the Woody Hayes facility. Everything that they do is for this type of season. And it's like, I don't know if you think that the 14 season was that, but they lost a game in the 14 season. So I think you could, like, take a little bit of, like, away from it. And I guess you could add a Heisman Trophy to the mix if you really wanted to be perfect. Like, I don't know, like, maybe Clemson's or LSU's year last year was the most perfect year a team could have. But I think when you add the recruiting results and the fact that their coach is young and invigorated by what's going on, like, I don't know that you could take – let's put it this way. You couldn't buy stock in any other program over Ohio State if they win on Monday.
Yeah, I agree with that. I think that's true. Or, like, it's at their stock is at worst as valuable as
they're
probably
Amazon.
Alabama's.
They're Amazon.
Yeah. What's the equivalent? Is there another stock that's as valuable as Amazon?
Apple's more valuable. Apple. Or you mean from market cap, Apple's the most the largest company in the world. But Amazon, I mean, Apple's probably the better example because Apple's actually increased in value over the course of the past year even more than Amazon. Believe
what
it or
about
not.
That? What about that Chinese Tesla that Tim May let you know?
Tim May, if you're listening, thanks, bud. Tim May told me to buy this stock called NIO Limited at 4 last year, and now it's at 51.
That sounds good. I'm not. I don't know what the stock market is or how it works or why people do it, but that sounds good.
Tim May of Letterman Row, love you, bud.
Thanks, man. Ari is putting a pool in his place because of Tim May.
Yeah, I don't know about a pool, but you know.
All right, so we're gonna we'll give our picks later this week, but I think we're inching closer to talking about what it would mean if Ohio State wins. I think we can inch a little closer to whether or not we think Ohio State can win. And you and Jesse Temple, our colleague who covers Wisconsin, you do the Big Football Show Friday pick show with him, and I know you guys have that on the books already. Mm-hmm. But you pick against the spread. And
yeah,
I'm assuming
against the spread.
I'm assuming you both picked Ohio State against the spread, right?
I did, yeah. Well, the current spread, which of two scores, yeah.
Yeah, I think that's fair. And I don't know what my pick is yet, but I'm at the very least going to pick Ohio State to cover. But you said Jesse asked you an interesting question when you were doing that, right? And it was, where does Ohio State have an identifiable advantage against Alabama?
Yeah, like what would you say, like he asked me, if you were to say coming into this game, because we know that Alabama is Goliath, where you would say Ohio State has a distinct advantage in this football game, and I had a hard time coming up with a distinct answer to that question, and you were very quick to answer it. I wasn't, and I didn't answer it the same way that you did, but that's a really tough decision because it's like, I guess Ohio State's got a better quarterback, right? You take the quarterback, but Mac Jones has Joe Burrow numbers. Their running back is Najee Harris. They might have Jalen Waddle and Devontae Smith. Their offensive line, I think, is comparable. And Ohio State's it's the two defenses that seem to be weak at times. So, like, my thing that I said was, I think it's possible that Ohio State has a distinct advantage over other opponents that Alabama has had because their defensive line collectively is playing the best that they've ever played as a unit together right now, and Mac Jones has not been rattled much this year. And if Ohio mm-hmm. State was able to rattle Trevor Lawrence the way that they were, if they can get into Mac Jones' face, I think there is a universe that exists where a rattled Mac Jones opens the door for Ohio State to potentially win this game. If Ohio State is able to rattle Trevor Lawrence, who is the best quarterback prospect in the last 10 years in college football, then they can do it to Mac Jones too if the pressure's there.
Yeah, I think that's certainly my key on the defensive side is can they get pressure in Mac Jones' face? Because I still need to watch more Alabama. I'm going to have another film study story later this week. But just like watching them throughout the year and like discussing Alabama with people throughout the year, like I always watch them and think to myself, like, is anyone ever in Mac Jones' face? Like, has anyone ever bothered him? And there was a play against Notre Dame that I saw before I stopped watching the game because it was a blowout where like he spun out of pressure, threw on the run. I was like, oh, that looked pretty good. Like, I didn't know he could do that. But if you look at his numbers overall this year, like he's not been pressured at all. So, and I don't know, Alabama's offensive line is really good. It won the Joe Moore Award for best offensive line in the country. I think that's warranted. Sometimes that award's a little weird. Like LSU won it last year. I don't think they should have, but Alabama won it this year, and I think that's deserved. So generating that kind of pressure against Alabama is going to be much tougher, I think, than it was against Clemson, but it's not impossible, and I think if they can bother Mac Jones, who's not mobile at all, you don't worry about quarterback running this game, I think they can swing the game for Ohio State. But when you asked me that question, where does Ohio State have an identifiable advantage, I immediately thought of Ohio State's offensive line and their ability to run the ball against Alabama. Neither of these defenses, I think, are particularly good. But I do think when you think of a typical Nick Saban Alabama defense, you think of like monsters on the defensive line, right? And I don't think they have that. I don't really think they have that in the front seven. They're very good in the front seven because they're Alabama and they're always going to be very good. But I don't know if they're like elite or game-changing in the front seven. And Ohio State's offensive line is like playing out of his mind right now. And it's kind of crazy because I think rhythm is very important in that position. And they've played like three games in 40 days. And in all three of those games, they had a different starting five combination. But that five, and I would assume that probably Matt Jones would play in place of Harry Miller again in the national title game. They were really good against Clemson. They owned them, I think, like from the jump. They protected Justin Fields really well, but more importantly, they just knocked them off the ball. And if you look at Alabama's metrics compared to Clemson's coming in from a defensive line standpoint, they don't really stack up. They're not a huge tackle for loss team. They're not super sturdy against the run. And Ohio State's offensive line is I don't know if it is the best in the country, but I think it could be playing like the best in the country. Now, similar to how it felt in 2014, like I don't know total body of work if you were to say those guys were the best offensive line all year long, but they were the best when it mattered the most. And I think Ohio State's offensive line is trending towards that now. So you got to throw on Bama to beat them, and you got to throw deep shots on Bama to beat them. But I think you set that up by running the ball the way they did against Clemson, and I think they're going to be able to do that against Alabama.
Man. I can't believe what we're hearing. It's all true, but I can't believe it. Hello, Paris Johnson. I just watched that clip, and I didn't see that during the game, and that was pretty good.
it's like they're missing their starting left guard. Matthew Jones starts in his place, and then Matthew Jones gets hurt, and Paris Johnson comes in, and like none of it mattered. They're shuffling pieces all over the place on the offensive line, and like hasn't mattered at all in their last three games. Shout out the stud.
We both, I don't know if we talked about this in the last podcast, but I guess you can never talk about it too much. But is this starting to feel like 2014 to you?
It's like in 14, they beat Alabama, and then like I did not hesitate. I knew, like I felt very strongly they were going to beat Oregon. I don't feel as strongly that they're going to beat Alabama this year. I think they can, and maybe I'll end up picking them, but I don't like, I thought, I remember saying this in a video we shot with Doug at the hotel in Dallas before the title game, and I said, I think Ohio State's better than Oregon everywhere but quarterback, because Oregon had Marcus Mariota. And he looked at me and was like, everywhere but quarterback? And I said, yeah, everywhere but quarterback. And like they just like they were so much better than that team. It was obvious. And that, like Ohio State might be better than Alabama, but it's not as obvious heading into it. So it, like team of destiny, whatever, like that kind of stuff, it does feel like that's in the air a little bit, but I don't feel the same way going into the championship. Like I was pretty sure they were going to beat Oregon. I'm not sure about this.
Yeah. Yeah. Also, I don't know like if you could say Ohio State's better than Alabama everywhere but quarterback. I think that they are worse than Alabama everywhere but quarterback.
Quarterback. Yeah, it's like the opposite. Yeah.
So I don't know if that makes you feel better. I don't know. I think offensive lines are a wash. I mean, you want to break it down and try to break it down?
Let's break it down.
I don't know if I know Alabama's personnel quite as deeply as you do, so let's lead the way here. But I think Ohio State's got a better quarterback and a better defensive line than Alabama.
Yeah.
Their offensive lines.
I think Ohio State's got better linebackers.
Ohio State has better linebackers. Secondary, I'm just going to blindly say Alabama.
I'm going to write this down. Hold on. Okay. Running back, receiver, O-line, D-line, linebackers. Secondary. So we think Ohio State's got linebackers, defensive line, quarterback.
Quarterback. And offensive line is a tie.
Tie. Okay. Can already see where this is headed. Okay.
What do you mean?
We're going to end up on a wash. Najee Harris, you take Najee Harris over Trey Sermon?
I'm not taking Eddie George over Trey Sermon right now. Yes, I take Najee Harris over.
It's hard, right? Because Trey Sermon's playing really well, but it's like Najee Harris is awesome.
Najee Harris is a better running back than Trey Sermon. Like, I don't know. Like, what are we doing? I'm not there yet.
Clearly he is, but it's like, is he?
I mean, like, he might be a better running back. I don't know who's going to be more productive.
Yeah. No, that's a good way to put it. I'll put that as a check for Alabama with like a
could you
a
imagine
shruggy, a shruggy shoulder
if somebody
guy.
Took that clip from our podcast today and transported it back to a month ago?
Yeah,
what the hell?
Is this parody?
Najee Harris gets the nod. Receivers, I think that Ohio State's receivers cumulatively are just as good as cumulatively what nobody's as good as Devontae Smith, but Olave and Wilson is deadly. I would say that's a tie.
if Waddle was playing in 100%, I would give it to Bama for
sure. Yeah, yeah. I mean,
but it is, yeah. God, I feel like an idiot saying this, but I also feel like it's not that crazy.
Why do you feel like an idiot? Ohio State's got like 10 five-star prospects.
I just worry all the time about sounding like an Ohio State homer because I don't want to be one. I think Landis, I would give
these
the
two
I would
teams
give
are
the
very similarly built, so it's not a homer thing. I mean, they're similarly built. They've got what does
the
Alabama
problem,
have
the
two
problem
more,
is,
more blue chip prospects on their entire 85-man roster than Ohio State? It's literally the same.
The problem is that as we're breaking this down this way, it's like pushing me towards wanting to pick Ohio State. I don't really want to do that because I think it's a little crazy.
I don't know. Yeah, I mean, I don't know if we're like picking things because we're too close to one side of it and we're not experts on Bama. Like, I don't know how like sound of a pick our decision to put Ohio State's linebackers are. Like, I don't know the answer to that. Maybe that's clearly the case. But I think it'd be interesting to, like, and maybe we'll do this, I don't know, before the game, getting Aaron Suttles on here and just asking him this question. Because I think he might have a different perspective of it. Because, like, I view Ohio State's linebackers as, like, the number one punching bag for Ohio State fans in the last 2 years. Like, now we're going to say they're better than Bama's linebackers. And maybe so. I mean, they all, like, Justin Hilliard played like Ray Lewis out there, so like I don't know what. Like,
yeah, I think anyone who's criticizing Ohio State linebackers this year like really doesn't know what they're looking at. You just don't know, and I think it's a hard position to evaluate, and the evaluation of it has changed because offense has changed. But if you think they're not good, then you don't know what you're looking at. And I get it, like Tuff Borland's
like
a little slow.
I like when you get all yeah. Tuff Borland's the MVP of the semifinal, so put some respect on that name.
That's right. Man's name is Tuff. I think I'm going to remove the tie from offensive line. I would give the nod for offensive line to Alabama. It's close, but I'd give them the nod.
Okay, maybe give – you mean for at receiver?
No, for I'm just going back through these because we had offensive line as a tie. I would take – I think Ohio State is better at quarterback. Alabama, I would take Najee Harris, but it's close, and I can't believe I'm saying that.
Ohio State's better at tight end.
Jahleel Billingsley is pretty good.
Yeah, he is. But I mean, like, cumulatively. I mean,
I would take Ohio State's tight ends.
I think the interesting dynamic here of who's got the best type, like, position group and who's got the best player in that position group are not always the same answer. Like, I think I would take Ohio State's wide receiver room, but I think Alabama's got the best receiver. I would take Ohio State's tight end room, but I think you could make the case that Alabama has the best tight end. So it's like a little bit it's a little bit hard to pick about like how that's going to have an impact on the game because you put yourself in a position where there's only one playing a lot of times. But like Mac Jones, even though you give Ohio State the quarterback advantage, Mac Jones has put up video game numbers this year. So like just because Ohio State's quarterback is physically better doesn't mean that he can't be more effective. And like I think that's kind of the danger that you get into when you start talking about this. It's like Najee Harris is a better running back, and he's going to be like Derrick Henry, who I saw led the NFL in rushing and would have been fourth in the league in rushing if he didn't play in the first half of any of his games this year. And, you know, the guy might not have as many rushing yards as Sermon at the end of the game because Ohio State's offensive line has a bigger advantage on Alabama's defensive line than vice versa. So it's like I don't think this is always the cleanest way to break down a game. But when you're looking at – basically, I think the takeaway here is that if you look at the entire position breakdown, you're looking at two teams that are very similarly talented and very evenly distributed. And when you look at the 247 composite talent rankings, they're right next to each other. Mm-hmm. And if you look at their recruiting classes this year, Alabama kind of took away a little bit because they got a few more commitments at the end, but they're also identical. And it's like these two teams are very similarly built, and it's a matter of whether or not you think that Nick Saban and his staff are more prone or more apt to get more out of their players than Ohio State coaching staff is. And I think I can make the argument right now that no Ohio State coaching staff in the history of the program has gotten more out of their roster than Ohio State did on Saturday.
Yeah, I mean they maxed out for sure.
And if you're talking about maxed out Ohio State, I think they can beat anybody in the country. And I think that's a fair statement to say.
I also agree with that. I think that's true. I'm confused, man. I don't know what I'm going to pick in this game. I got to watch more Alabama.
I mean, one team is getting two scores, so I think that we know what side I would.
No, yeah. Pick. If I were betting, I know what side I would bet for sure. But I'm not. I did the big football show with Audrey Snyder that ran on Tuesday, and I just like asked her what she thought, and she said like she was considering picking Ohio State to win. And I said, like, if you would have asked me before the playoff, you think Ohio State can win a national title? I'd be like, no way. And now I'm thinking twice about it.
It's crazy what blowing out Clemson and looking perfect and seeing Justin Hilliard run all over the field like Lawrence right. Taylor and, yeah. You know, what, Eddie George in the backfield and, you know, I don't know. Their defensive ends were on fire. Like, everything that you would want to see. It's like, too, I was listening to Doug's podcast, Buckeye Talk, and they're like, what would be if you had – one of their questions was, what would you say was Ohio State's weakness? Or, like, what did they do poorly in Clemson? Like, I don't even know how to answer that question. What didn't they do well? Did they not tackle really well?
Tackle in the secondary. Which is, like, a huge deal against Alabama.
Yeah. Why?
Defensive backs tackle.
It's not that big of a deal.
Because Devontae Smith is the baddest man on the planet.
Does Devontae Smith have yak?
He's got yak. He's got yak for days. Najee Harris also has yak.
But if Ohio State gives up 221 yards and two touchdown receptions to Devontae Smith, can they still win?
Yeah. How many more touchdowns are you going to score? If he scores two and Najee Harris scores.
I'm not talking. That's all I'm saying. Blindly going into the game, if I told you Devontae Smith is going to have 221 yards receiving and two touchdown catches, would that change your perspective of who you would want to pick going into the game?
Maybe, because I'm not even thinking about the yards. I'm just thinking about the scores. So if he's only scoring twice.
Only? You think that that's like a plus for Ohio State?
If he only scores twice, I think maybe it could be. I'm just trying to do the. It's
what do you think? Like, what is this guy supposed to do?
I think it's legitimately first to 50. I think that's what this game is, or like first to 48 or 49 or whatever. I just
gave you a stat line of like an absolute monster of a game, and like that's where we're at right now, where you might think if he only has like a. One of the best stat lines humanly possible for a receiver in a college football playoff final, that would be good news. The over's slipping, too. It's down to 74, so.
Devontae Smith had three touchdowns against Notre Dame, two against Florida. He didn't score against Arkansas. I guess maybe he didn't play that much. He had three against LSU, two against Auburn, two against Kentucky, or three or four against Mississippi State, two against Georgia. It's like, yeah, if you hold Devontae Smith to two, that's a good day for yeah. considering some of the results he's had this year. Two's about, it looks like he's, yeah. I feel okay about two.
Yeah. 221 yards is a lot, though.
That's a lot. Yeah, you're moving the ball if you're doing that. Unless it's just like he has a
80-yard touchdown.
280-yard touchdowns, yeah.
Yeah.
That's the thing about Ohio State. It's kind of strange. Like, they give up all these big plays, but they're not a team that gets the ball moved on them regularly. Like a team has yet to march up and down the field in Ohio State like consistently all year. It's very bizarre. But they also haven't seen anything close. Like Alabama's, everyone last year talked about like LSU's offense is once in a lifetime. It's the best offense ever. I don't know if we'll ever see anything like it. And like Alabama's is better. Like statistically, if Joe Burrow's numbers are a little better than Mac Jones, if Joe Burrow had more games, but in terms of like points per possession and like available yards and stuff like that, this Alabama offense is better.
Yeah.
Have fun, Ohio State.
Yeah. Good luck. Godspeed.
No, I have every confidence in the world that Ohio State's offense can hang with Alabama's and keep it close, if not outscore them. But I think that's what this game is. I was not so sure that the Sugar Bowl was going to be a blowout. A shootout. I am very sure this is going to be a shootout.
So we've got about five more minutes left, and I think that we're going to do another podcast before we head into the game. But did you want to talk about Urban and Jim Harbaugh for 5 minutes?
The $12 million man, Urban Meyer. Yeah. It seems legit, right? It seems like maybe this is going to happen. Urban Meyer to the Jaguars. I don't think he would have talked to me about it. Like, I talked to Urban on Monday for the story I'm writing about 2014 Alabama, and like I considered like making a joke about the Jaguars just to see like what he would say. And I didn't do it because I didn't want him to get mad at me. It makes me a bad reporter, I guess.
Were you afraid?
No, I wasn't afraid. It was just like we were having a good conversation about the 2014 Alabama game. I didn't want to like derail it.
She'd be like, hey, so speaking of the 2014 Alabama game, how do you think the Jacksonville Jaguars would have stacked up in the middle of that
one? Yeah, it's like, if Justin plays well in this game, like, will you draft him instead of Trevor?
I think that if he's ever going to make the jump into the NFL, that this makes sense. And it's always been a matter of what he's up for physically. It's never been a matter of whether or not it would be an attractive thing for him to try. So, like, now that you're in a situation where you can go back to a place that he's very familiar with in terms of, you know, part of the country, I love that, you know, opportunity for him. And I also saw, like, some pretty crazy stats. And I'm trying to find them on my phone right now because I texted them to a friend about the Jaguars. But Jacksonville is set up very, very nicely right now. Mm-hmm. Two first-round picks, two second-round picks, a third-round pick, fourth through seven-round picks. So, like, he can go in and, like, be a part of a very important draft for them. Also have $81 million in cap space, which is the best of all job openings. And it's in a part of the country where you get Trevor Lawrence and you're familiar. Like, what if you're ever going to take a job, I think that this one would make the most sense. Instead of, like, just going to whatever random job in whatever random city comes open. Like, is he going to go coach the Lions in 2 years? So this is something that's, like, attractive to him. And it doesn't Jacksonville's owner, like, some crazy rich guy who just wants to throw money around and do whatever he can and put whirlpools in everybody's individual locker. And, like, wasn't he, like one of the best owners in sports to work for, apparently? Like, I don't know.
Yeah, and he's loaded.
I could see it happen.
He's one of the richest men in the world, I think. I could see it happening. Jacksonville, I don't think Urban would go to the NFL for like a massive rebuild. I don't think Jacksonville is a massive rebuild. You're going to get your quarterback. They have DJ Chark. James Robinson's a pretty good running back. I think they probably need to build out the offensive line, but they have two first-round picks, like you said. They have a shit ton of cap money. They got dudes on defense. I think Jacksonville is a franchise that can become a playoff team, and like it's contingent on Trevor, but I think they can become a playoff team in like 2 years.
Yeah.
Maybe even next year if Trevor's awesome as a rookie. So yeah. Like if he was ever going to make the jump, that is like exactly the kind of opportunity you'd want to walk into. Like because it mitigates the losing. Like I don't think Jacksonville is going to go 4-12 next year. And I do think that'd be hard for Urban, though I also believe that he understands that he needs to recalibrate if he's going to do this. So I don't think it'd be something that destroys him like some other people think. But I also believe that Jacksonville could be like 9-7 next year.
Yeah,
unless Urban goes out and
I'm not
some dingbat to be his offensive coordinator.
I'm not a Herman's available. I am not much of a NFL whiz the way that maybe even you are because you find this stuff fascinating. But I just feel like when you look at teams in the NFL who middle around and are bad for long periods of time, that they just have a hard time finding their quarterback. And I feel like the hardest thing to do in the NFL is to find your long-term solution at quarterback. And Urban would step into a scenario right now where he would have the closest thing to a sure thing as a rookie quarterback possible. And I think that in general, and the fact that it's in Florida, in a place that doesn't have crazy expectations like the Patriots, I think that it would be an easier job from a stress standpoint than it would be coaching Ohio State. You can lose games and learn from them, which Urban Meyer's done very well during his career at Ohio State. Like, I think that it'd be a very entertaining thing to watch, and I think it would make a ton of sense if he wanted to do it. What I don't know is if Urban Meyer is like on the hook here and might be the next Jacksonville coach, like what does that mean for Jim Harbaugh, who now reportedly wants to get out into the league? Which surprised me, because he struck me as somebody who would be too stubborn to give up before succeeding rather than leaving as the guy that didn't accomplish everything he could have. And like him willingly wanting to walk away 0-5 against Ohio State, or what is it? Is it 0-5?
He's 0-5, yeah.
Yeah, against Ohio State seems very odd to me.
There's a weird thing happening. I feel like there are more reports of college coaches being interested in the NFL right now than there typically are. Because you have Urban, obviously, who's unemployed but is still a college coach. Harbaugh, Pat Fitzgerald's like gotten his name out there. Dan Mullen put his name out there. I think maybe like Matt Campbell's name is out there, and maybe there's some others that I'm forgetting. But I do think on some level there's a little bit of trepidation among college coaches. Like as we head into this era where players have more agency, and there's going to be NIL stuff, and there's the one-time transfer rule, and like players are just getting a little more empowered, and it's going to change college football a little bit. I don't think for the worse. I think for the better. but it's like a different kind of set of challenges for college coaches to deal with, and maybe they would just rather avoid the headache altogether and like try to jump to the NFL, where roster management is not easier, but it's different and you're not dealing with that kind of stuff. And I don't know, that like to me makes those coaches, like if you're jumping for that reason, like I don't know, screw you, I hope you go lose and go 0-16 in the NFL, but I think that's possible. Like if you're looking to leave college football because you're upset because players are about to become empowered, like have fun coaching millionaires. But I do think that's part of the equation here. And I do think, like, I don't know, like, Jim Harbaugh's thing, just I think he's had enough proof that whatever his thing is, like, doesn't really resonate with college players, because Michigan's not very good, and maybe he thinks it can resonate with NFL players, or maybe he just thinks he's better suited for that. I think maybe he might just be cooked, and I wouldn't hire him if I were an NFL franchise, but it's not going to surprise me one bit if someone does, because that's all the NFL does is recycle coaches who don't deserve second or third or fourth chances.
Yeah. It's crazy. So who's an NFL coach first?
I think Urban will be an NFL. Like I think last time we talked about this, he's like, do you think Urban's going to coach? And we both said like, no, immediately. Like, I've changed my mind on that. I think I'd be surprised now if Urban's not the Jaguars coach. So I think Urban will be one before Harbaugh.
It does seem to have changed a little bit, doesn't it?
Yeah. What if Harbaugh gets hired by the Texans and he has to coach against Urban twice a year? Do you think he'd turn it down? If Urban gets a Jaguars job and the only NFL team that will hire Jim Harbaugh is the Houston Texans and he has to go coach against Urban twice a year, do you think he'd turn it down?
Yeah. No, I don't. But it would be crazy if he went 0-2 against the Jags the first year.
Yeah, so that's another thing. That it's like, not Ohio State's in a national championship, and when Urban does make that jump, we'll talk a lot about it because it's going to be fascinating. But it's in the news right now, along with Ohio State and Alabama getting prepared for their national championship on January 11th in Miami. I'm in Florida, so I'll probably just swing by and watch the game, or maybe I'll hang here near the palm trees and the hot tub and watch it on television. But we'll have another show later this week. We'll give our picks at some point. I think get you guys involved with some Q&A as well. But it's pretty crazy that we've gotten to this point. Ohio State is about to play in the national championship against Alabama. And I certainly didn't think that we'd be talking about it. I don't think Ari did either, but here we are doing it. So
yeah,
thanks for listening. 2-4-6 with A&B. Subscribe, rate, and review wherever you listen to podcasts. 5 stars on Apple would be swell. Subscribe to The Athletic, theathletic.com/4-6. Thanks for listening. We'll talk to you guys later in the week.